Hello there, and welcome back to the Isle of Wight show with me, Joe Redstone. My next conversation with the people who work up at the Mountbatten Hospice was with Nigel Hartley, who is the CEO of the hospice. Nigel has worked in hospices for 30 years. He started at the London Lighthouse in 1988 and is now in his fifth year at Mountbatten. He has written extensively about hospices, written a few books about them, and he regularly talks about his work and the role that hospices play at universities and conferences all around the world. Having sat with thousands of dying people in that time, Nigel is uniquely positioned, I think, to talk about why hospice care is so important and how we can all perhaps overcome our fear of death. It's an amazing conversation, and so without further ado, here is my chat with Nigel Hartley. And I'm here today with Nigel Hartley, who is the CEO. Is that the correct title for you,
it is, Nigel? Yes,
the CEO of the Mountbatten Hospice. Firstly, thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate that. And let's start with hospices generally. Like, where do they come from, and why are they important?
Well, there have always been hospices for the last 300, 400, 500 years, but most of them have been, a version of a convent or a monastery where religious orders took in the sick and the destitute. But in the 1950s and 60s, there was a movement created around, I suppose, facing up to what were described as the terrible deficits in end-of-life care, particularly in the UK. And that came out of the new National Health Service of the 1940s and 50s. So when the National Health Service was created, it was an extraordinary institution, of course, that we're all very fortunate to have. But it's an organisation that people go into, get their problems sorted out, and then come out again. And that was its culture, and that was the way it was put together. And rather naively, they hadn't thought about how they would manage or what they would do if people went into hospital, the new hospitals of the new NHS, and died. And it was a remarkable character who I was quite fortunate to work with for a while, called Cicely Saunders, who worked as a nurse in the National Health Service, and she noticed that dying really wasn't part of the vision. She tried to, in lots of ways, and to change that within the NHS, but to cut a long story short, didn't manage it. So she got together with a group of friends, bought a piece of land in South London, and built what we call the first modern hospice. And that was a place where people could come out of the new London hospitals, have a bed within this hospice organisation, be looked after by expert doctors, nurses, therapists, psychologists, and stay there until they died. So she very much created this model of hospice as a healthcare institution and as an institution to support people at the end of life. And since then, you know, hospices have grown like wildfire, really. So in the last 50 years, St. Christopher's opened in 1967, hospices around 220 in the UK, and hospices in 120 countries across the world, an extraordinary phenomenon. And yet still, there are deficits in how people are cared for. So it hasn't solved the whole problem.
So you guys are making, obviously doing massive things to help solve that problem down here. And recently you acquired another building in Southampton. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, the reasons why you felt that that might be an important thing to do. Can you explain a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's important that hospices don't remain isolated within their own communities. They are normally too small to create any big impact, to create any big change or movement of change, other than within the communities and they sit. The Isle of Wight is quite an extraordinary place, and it is a very helpful geographical testbed, if you like, to try out new models and to see what works. So, you know, we know on the island we have a growing older population. I mean, that's common across the UK, but the difference with the Isle of Wight is we're thought to be around 15 to 20 years ahead of the rest of the UK. So if we can find some solutions to some of those issues of supporting older people, particularly at the end of life, then hopefully the rest of the country can learn from it, and we can, you know, give them what we know. So part of all of that has been around sort of developing the scale of our influence. And Southampton, in real terms, isn't really that far away. It just happens to have a very small stretch of water in between it. You know, going to Southampton Hospital from the island actually takes less time than going to a hospital in London, 2 miles away. So, you know, we have to keep all of that into context. And more island people are ending up in Southampton Hospital. You know, we're asked consistently now by families to help get their loved one home to die from Southampton. So having a foot on the mainland seems quite critical to us in terms of protecting the island and protecting island people. But it also gives us the scale to perhaps our innovations and the new things that we're doing to try them in a much larger and more noticeable way, which potentially will attract more funding. Mm. So, you know, so the scale is important to us.
Yeah, and I guess there's two things in there. It's great to hear you talk in terms of something that we do well on the island, and something that we can, for want of a better expression, export to the wider world. Is that part of your plan moving forward?
So, you know, it's incredibly flattering when someone comes from Southampton and says, we want our hospice to look like yours. You know, being flattered is nice, but it's not the reason to do it. But so, you know, we thought long and hard about it, and we at the end, we came down to the benefits far outweighing the difficulties of joining up. The hospice in Southampton needs a lot of work. You know, we have a lot of experience here. Our team of staff and volunteers are absolutely extraordinary in their commitment and their experience and their drive to want to do better. So why wouldn't we use that to take it further?
And the team that you've got, I've had the pleasure of meeting a handful of them over the last few days. There's no doubt that the team is an extraordinary thing. And you said to me just now that it's so important to remember that the building is just the tip of the iceberg. And that's definitely something I'm learning. Can you talk to us a little bit about that as well, please?
Yes. So, again, you know, we talked about St. Christopher's. The first hospice opened in 1967, and it opened as an inpatient unit. So it was a series of beds and rooms where people came and stayed till they died. I mean, since then, I think we've realised the limitations of beds, particularly hospitals, hospices, care homes. You know, there's too much a need from people to be able to solve that need by putting them into a bed in a building. Most of us, if we're being really honest, when we're ill, would much rather be at home, in familiar surroundings with people we know around us. So our drive has been to keep as many people at home as possible, but with good care. So, you know, the key thing for us is that people get excellent, outstanding care, whichever bed they die in. So it doesn't have to be in this building. So we're looking after around 1,500 people a day at home on any one day. Our nurses, doctors, carers, therapists, psychologists are out there visiting people within their own homes, and that includes care homes as well. And, you know, hopefully enabling people to remain in the bed they've slept in for the last years, as opposed to moving them somewhere they don't know. So that's really important. So this building really is the tip of the iceberg, and the beds here are here to support the work we do in the community.
One of the things that I've noticed as I chat to you guys is you use words death, dying, bereavement. They roll off your tongue much more comfortably than they do for the rest of us. Clearly, that's partly a familiarity thing. But does that speak to a kind of bigger problem that we've got?
Well, I think there's a huge problem with no one wanting to think about death and dying, or to even think that they will die when they're well. I mean, who wants to think about it? You know, why would you? But actually, we know that it is important to think well ahead in terms of our own death and our own bereavement, and to plan for it and to understand what it's going to be like, maybe make known what we would like when it happens to us. Because without that, it's always going to be chaos, crisis, panic, and terribleness. And that's no way to die. So we have an absolute drive to make dying as normal as possible. That's quite terrifying for most people. We get that. We've had to challenge ourselves to use that language because sometimes I think the very organisations that deliver care around end of life are almost more afraid of using those words. So, you know, we have done a huge amount of work internally to say, actually, you know what, somebody didn't pass away last night, they died, and let's just say it as it is. And that's not to shock people, but it's to, I suppose it's to normalise the fact that actually dying is quite normal in the majority of the time. And we want people to think about it well in advance, to plan for it, and to feel comfortable with it.
How much of that is just fear? And would you, as someone who has sat with thousands of people at the end of their life, what would you have any advice for kind of overcoming that?
I think there are probably different ways of looking at it. So for many people, it's the fear of the unknown. And actually, none of us, however many times you've sat with someone who's dying, know what happens when you die. No one has that knowledge. But we can only tell our stories, and we can only, I suppose, try and help people to understand that dying doesn't always have to be destruction and terrible and painful, that we have a whole model of care where for the majority of people we support, actually we can make it bearable. And I think people don't understand that. You know, a lot of people, I was talking to someone recently who was brought up just down the road here from the hospice, and as kids they used to run past the gate in case they saw anything, you know. And that, we need to change that. Mm. We need people to feel welcome here, and we need people to feel that they can welcome death into their lives. It is difficult when you lose somebody you love. Of course it is. And we don't underestimate that, but actually, life goes on, and with support and understanding, we can all get through it.
Mm. Yeah, when I was speaking to Jackie, we touched briefly on the bereavement side of things. Could you, with your, you know, sort of 30 years worth of experience, would you have any sort of pointers in that area? Anything that you know, those of us who are going to be left behind, and there's me, I don't know, maybe using the wrong language again. But yeah, that is something that I hadn't particularly considered up until now.
Well, you know, bereavement is, again, a healthy response to someone dying. There's nothing wrong with the strength of feeling that comes when we're bereaved, you know, of sadness, of guilt, of all of that stuff that all of us will have experienced. And I suppose what we need to do is to help people understand that it is okay to have that reaction and response, and there are people who understand that, and there are people here who can support them. So, you know, we run the island-wide bereavement service, which means that anyone who's bereaved on the island, wherever the death has happened, it doesn't have to be from Mount Batten, under the care of Mount Batten, people can access that free of charge. So we have lots of children, for instance, who come for support, families together that come for support. And, you know, there's a huge growing need on the island with the older population of bereavement in older people, particularly with couples who retire to the island. You know, it's their kind of paradise there. They buy their lovely house and suddenly one of them dies. And then there's a whole issue of impending isolation and loneliness. And actually, if bereavement isn't acknowledged and supported, it can very quickly turn into some serious mental health issues. So we're trying very hard to make sure that we know people, and we're you know, people know where they can access that support. And for many, it's just about having one or two conversations, which helps.
Unquestionably, the biggest thing that I've learnt from talking to you guys is that Mount Batten isn't just, as I said to you, a posh hospital where people come to die. That feels like a fairly common misconception. Is there, if there was kind of one thing that you could change around the public perception of Mount Batten and or hospices in general, what might that be?
I think there's something really important around not making assumptions and about not being afraid of us. And those two things are quite common. So people will believe they know what goes on here, but will have never really had any experience or talked to anyone about it. And because of that, people will instinctively just be afraid when they hear the name. You know, hospice for many people is something they don't want to contemplate. Death is something people don't want to contemplate. And of course, we understand that. But contemplating it when you're well and healthy doesn't mean that it's going to happen tomorrow. You know, and I think that terrifies people too. They think, well, if I say it out loud, it's going to happen to me. So, you know, we're dealing with changing a huge public culture and a huge set of public behaviours and misconceptions, which is not, you know, it's not unsurmountable, but it's a huge challenge to do that. And, you know, people say to me, actually, you know, we don't want to talk about it. It's fine, but I suppose what we're trying to say, look, we know that when you do plan, and you don't have to talk about it all the time, endlessly, but when you do take time in your life to plan the things and write it down, it makes a big difference when it happens. It makes a difference to yourself and your family, but it also makes a difference to us in terms of the resource we have to use. You know, I arrived at work a few months ago, and I get here very early in the morning, and there's a man and a woman in reception here physically fighting with each other. I managed to calm them down. It turns out it was a brother and a sister whose mother had just died. Very emotional moment for them. And they were arguing because one said that mum wanted to be buried and the other one said that mum wanted to be cremated. And no one had asked her. And it, you know, so we have to use our resource dealing with that and helping people through it, which is quite traumatic and very distressing, when actually that could have all been dealt with very easily much earlier on. So it's really important to understand that it makes a big difference if you do are able to plan in some way.
And more directly related to the hospice, as a member of, you know, the general public on the island, what can we do? What can we do that will make a difference to you guys?
I think, first of all, don't ignore us. Because I think that's about ignoring death and dying and bereavement, as we've been talking about. And I think, you know, there's something around developing a healthy curiosity with death and dying and with Mountbatten and what it is and what it does. We're incredibly fortunate with the support we get, you know, but a lot of it is support at a distance. You know, people want to support us, but they don't quite want to acknowledge. And a lot of people support us because they've had experiences here, which is great. But until every member of the Isle of Wight community is able to say death, dying and bereavement out loud and to plan for their own end of life and to contemplate it, we still haven't done our job.
That sounds like a pretty large goal, but something tells me that you guys might just make it. Nigel, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. Thank you very much for your time.
Good, thank you.
To learn more about what the hospice do and how you might be able to get involved, please do visit their website, which is www.mountbatten.org.uk. That's mountbatten.org.uk. You can also find them at Facebook, where they are facebook.com/MountbattenIW. If you enjoyed this, please do check out my other podcast episodes, which you can find, well, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find them at my website, which is www.joeredston.com. That's joeredston.com. And there you will also find my blog and details about my book as well. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Cheers.